Welcome to Gardens for Everybody. This podcast will focus on the structure of soil, crumbs or block. Hi, Marianne. It's nice to be doing our podcast again.
Hi, Elizabeth. I love this.
And today, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about soil. And I think you wanted to start off telling us about soil structure, because last time we talked about soil texture. So what is soil structure?
Soil structure is how the soil components, the sandsill clay, are stuck together. Are they stuck together in a really loose structure, like if it was a sand on a beach case, they're not stuck together at all?
Yeah.
Or are they stuck together like super hard to deal with clay we have quite a bit of in the Ottawa Valley? So that is your soil structure. How are these components put together as little lumps?
Right. Okay. And so from the texture that we learned last time, now we're learning about how do they work together to form a soil and what sticks them together. So what does stick them together?
The most important thing is organic matter will stick them together in the best possible way. But organic matter includes all the prop roots, plant roots. It includes the tops of the plants. It includes every single microbe that's in the soil too. It's a really diverse thing.
So how do we amend? So we've got, say, clay soil, which most of us probably have here. So how do we amend that? Or how do we add organic matter to that clay in the first place?
Well, in Ottawa, you would start a flower bed. In the fall, you cut off the grass and then you would dig in organic matter, compost, into the soil where the bed is going to be. And make sure that you also put the grass in the bottom of the dig-in, because that's where the best soil is and the grass itself is great organic matter. So once in the fall, you put in the organic matter, but after that, in the springtime, you plant your plants, and from then on, you add organic matter by mulching with organic matter on top of the flower bed, not disturbing the soil. Since the mid-70s, I have been advocating no-till gardening. Tell everyone, don't touch the soil. And I realize after working with you in the Barrhaven Food Covered Garden that that's only a part of permaculture.
Totally. Yeah, this is very much all related to the discussion we had about permaculture previously and how we want to use things that work together and actually are less work for us because we're not digging everything all the time. We're just putting stuff on top. So what does organic matter that we're adding, what does it do for the soil?
So number one, it aggregates this mineral component of the soil together so that you get nice little lumps. And these nice little lumps allow for much better water infiltration as it comes in from the rain and percolation as it wanders down through the soil due to gravity going deeper. It allows for much better water retention because magically, organic matter is a great reservoir of water and nutrients. But it also is food for the microbes, and because it increases porosity, it allows air movement. So you have gas exchange capacity that's improved. So it allows the oxygen from the atmosphere to come in and be used by microbes, and it allows the microbes to release their CO2 out into the air. So you've got aggregation, water, food, and air, everything we love.
Yeah, we know we need all those things if we're going to grow any plants at all. Okay, so what about other things in the soil? What about the life in the soil? What is there living in soil?
A living soil is extremely dense in life. For example, 1 cubic centimeter of living soil has greater than 90 million individual microbes.
Wow.
1 gram has greater than 10 billion microbes.
That's a little mind-blowing.
In fact, there is much more life below the soil line than above the soil line in any living environment.
Wow. And so lots of microbes. And why are the microbes living there? What's good for them in the soil?
Well, the microbes need a home or a habitat. And, of course, the organic matter gives it the really ideal home to live in. And the organic matter is food for them to break down, consume, incorporate part of it for their own body, and release part of it. The organic matter will modulate the temperature so that it's not as extreme in the winter or cool days and not as hot in the hot days. But just to be aware, the microbes really love warmer soil temperatures. They don't like super hot, mm-hmm. but they do love, you know, beach weather.
Mm-hmm. I do too. And so can you tell me a little bit more about, well, what type of microbes are we talking about?
Well, we could start with the bacteria, which are the smallest mm-hmm. single-celled microbes in the soil. There are viruses. They're smaller, but they're not technically considered alive. So bacteria, which can constitute 80 to 90% by population mm-hmm. of the soil, and they tend to like neutral pH soils. They can fix nitrogen. They break down rock particles into nutrients. Wow. They are very bioactive. And they are both predator and prey. So when you have a living soil, you tend to have a lot less diseases because mm-hmm. the bacteria, which could cause disease, are also the food of other bacteria.
Wow. Okay, that's great. And what about other organisms? So they're 80 to 90%, but so that means there's more organisms there. What else have we got?
We have algaes. Some of them are photosynthetic, and that's what originally came out of the oceans onto land. Mm-hmm.
What is an algae? What do you mean by an algae?
It's going to be a photosynthetic, linear, single-celled organism that's filamentous. Mm-hmm. It's in the soil, such as the cyanobacters, which are blue-green algaes.
Right. So anything that, so it's the first photosynthetic
yes.
organisms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else in there?
Well, my favorite is the actinomycetes.
Okay.
The Why? The actinomycetes, you'll love this. As a doctor, you'll
yeah.
love this.
Yeah.
Actinomycetes are filamentous bacteria. So filamentous, and they secrete immense numbers of products into the soil, which are super important. They secrete actinomycetes, tetramycetes, streptomycetes, and many other.
Yes, these are all very familiar to the doctor and me. Yes, they're antibiotics. Yes.
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 And they are in the rhizosphere at the root tips
right.
where they are secreting all this. They're also breaking down mineral components and they're decomposing the super tough products in the plants, such as cellulose and lignin.
Right. Yeah. But the bits that are left behind that don't break down easily.
Yeah. The bacteria
right.
break down
yes.
the easy stuff.
Yeah.
And the actinomycetes break down the tough stuff.
Okay.
So the actinomycetes, when they're releasing all these antibiotics mm-hmm. and nutrients, enters into the water around the rhizosphere at the root mm-hmm. tip. And the plants are continuously sucking up a nice dose of antibiotics.
Wow.
With every sip of water they take.
That's fantastic. So anything else in the soil? I feel like there's more.
Oh my God, soil is so busy, so busy. We have fungi, and the fungi make up 80 to 90% of the soil by weight.
Okay, so although the bacteria, there's more of them, the fungus are actually there's a lot of fungus matter in the soil.
Huge. Well, only in a living soil. And the fungus are going to be able to connect completely different plant genuses together. So you could connect a grass to a pepper to a legume. The fungus is capable of extending the root system hugely out into the soil because it is filamentously tiny. And because it is such a tiny way to absorb mineral solution, the water solution that's in the soil with the minerals and the sugars and the antibiotics, but it's cheap from a plant's point of view because the plant feeds it a bit of sugar and it takes a lot less energy for the plant to feed the fungus that goes out into the soil than it is for the plant to make a root hair.
Right, because that would be huge, yeah, huge amounts of roots that the plant would have to make. But now the fungus is taking on that role for it and creating an extensive root system that the plant didn't have to make on its own. That's
oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
And the fungus, because it's so tiny, they can weave in and around the soil particles, and they even weave in between the clay soil particles.
Wow. So they're going to help that clay soil be easier to work as well, but easier for the plant to access the nutrients in the clay soil.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
Okay.
It really does loosen up the soil.
So anything else that we'll see in the soil? I know there's other things because well, there's worms, Marianne. What else is there?
Well, there's protozoa, which are kind of big and they're predators. There are nematodes, which are kind of big. And by the way, most nematodes are actually good. And in fact, there are fungus that are predators on nematodes. They make a noose and they strangle the nematode and then consume it. So fungus can act like an animal. There are nematodes that are predators on things we don't like, such as the grub.
The white grubs, yes. So that's something that we're always hearing in Ottawa is, you know, using nematodes to kill white grubs that are destroying people's lawns. But there are more than just that nematode around. Of course, it's not just one thing. It's many nematodes.
Yeah, that's Deinonyma and Heterodiptus. You're right. Those two are specific.
Yeah.
Whereas there's, I don't know how many nematodes. Mm-hmm. But the other favorite organism that I have is the earthworm, which is an invasive organism in North America. We did not have earthworms in North America prior to colonization. But the earthworms make channels down through the soil, which survive spring, summer, and fall perfectly. They are only changed during the winter freeze-thaw cycle. The channels are lined with polysaccharides, which make it nice and intact. And the polysaccharides are excellent at creating soil aggregates. But better than that, the microbes will come towards the earthworm channels, and so do the roots, and they fill up the earthworm channels with roots and microbes. So it's a bioactive zone. But when it rains, the rain can channel down through the earthworm tunnels into the soil. So the earthworms are excellent in disturbed soils. But you never, 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 never leave an earthworm in an undisturbed forest because the native forests of North America did not evolve to have earthworms.
Yeah. And perhaps for a future discussion might be to talk about some of the other worms that are moving in as colonizers too. But I think that's a discussion that we might have in the future. So talking about all this, it brings me back to, you know, the permaculture discussion that we had. And how, you know, we're looking for plants to work together and to have the soil healthy. And it seems like the plants are interacting with the mycorrhizae and they're getting benefits from the organisms in the soil. Have you got any examples about how that actually works in reality for us?
Well, you mentioned the three sisters.
Yeah, we've got corn, beans and squash.
Well, it turns out that corn, which is a grass, and bean, which is a legume, those two are fabulous together. So if you put anything in the grass family with a legume, then what happens is there is a fungus which goes in as an actinomorphic rhiza into the...
Hang on. Actinomorphic? What does that mean?
Oh, sorry, I'm wrong. It's endomorphic.
Endomorphic. Okay, perfect. On the same page. But endomorphic means into. Endo is into.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, so it's going into the plant.
That's correct.
Right. Okay,
and
got
you. And trees tend to have ectomorphic, which is around
right.
the root,
right.
rhizosphere, root hairs and roots, whereas the herbaceous plants, the ones that die back in the fall, they tend to have endomorphic.
Right.
So it goes, the fungus goes into the plant root where it has a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. But there's a symbiotic relationship with a bacteria that goes into the fungus. Now, the bacteria breaks down mineral components and releases nutrients in the soil, feeds the fungus. The fungus goes into the roots of the corn or grass or wheat, and it gets sugar from the plant. And it will give the corn some phosphorus, which is required for metabolism by the mitochondria. And then also the fungus is looped over through the soil to different legumes. And from the legumes, which are having a symbiotic relationship with rhizobium bacterium, and the rhizobium bacterium takes atmospheric nitrogen and turns it into a plant-usable form. And it shares it with both the plant and the fungus. So the fungus then carries the nitrogen back to the corn and shares some more phosphorus to the bean. So its metabolism is also being maintained with its mitochondria. So it's a circular sort of system where the fungus is attaching disparate plant species and sharing nutrients so that they're all thriving at optimal condition.
It sounds really, really, really great. And it's really the fundamentals of permaculture is allowing plants to fully connect. So I guess this rhizome network is connecting plants and everyone's benefiting in the most part from that connection that's being made.
It's so true.
It's like the connections are making a circular economy between microbes and plants. Now, we talked about the Green Revolution when we were talking about permaculture. We were saying how at that time people were adding a lot of fertilizer to the soil. You know, so what people were trying to do is they were trying to add lots of fertilizer to make plants grow. We've heard from you that the mycorrhizae are kind of doing that job too. So what happens to that system when we add fertilizer?
Oh, that's the long-term discovery, was that as we added nitrogen and fertilizer, particularly when the plants were young, when we first put them in, it suppressed the urge for the plant to cooperate with the fungus and bacteria. And so they didn't secrete sugars to give and feed the fungus and bacteria in the soil. So the fungus and bacteria in the soil gradually started to die away. And over the years, more and more fertilizers had to be added. So in fact, as the years have gone on, the amount of fertilizers being added has increased, but the crop yield has not increased proportionally. So now there are a lot of government agencies around the world trying to create the new Green Revolution, which is about the Brown Revolution.
Yeah.
Making the soil alive again.
Yes.
But there is an elapsed period when you're transitioning from the input of synthetic fertilizers to having a soil that's alive, well, and has a lot of organic matter in it to hold its nutrients.
So it sounds like ultimately, you know, we're hopefully, most of us, not starting out with dead soil, hopefully, and we're going to keep adding organic matter to maintain the microbes in the soil to give food to all of the organisms in the soil. This are then going to work together and our plants are going to be healthier, stronger, and we won't have to use synthetic fertilizer in order to keep the plants growing well.
Yeah, and that actually is my experience. When I would be a landscaping, I would give people's turf a total of 3 years to transition from one system to the organic system. So the first year, I would give the turf half of the fertilizers that they would have gotten, but I do it in more frequent application. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, there would be a quarter of the amount of fertilizers, while each year adding organic matter. And then in the last year, there would just be a tiny bit of synthetic fertilizers applied, continuously adding the organic matter. And after that, the turf and the flower beds could easily remain super healthy without addition of any chemical fertilizers.
And we employ those kind of techniques in the community garden, of course, because each year we leave the roots of the plants in the ground so as not to disturb the soil and to keep those roots there with their mycorrhizal connections, so that fungal elements in our soil aren't being broken down each year and we're there when we go planting the next year.
Yeah, and the stalks and roots form so many functions. They are organic matter. They allow water to infiltrate and penetrate through the soil because the water just goes down the channels following the roots. They feed the microbes in the soil. They're just so beneficial to leave them intact in the soil and break down.
Yeah. This was great, Marianne. Thank you very much. You really broke it down. And although there's a lot of complexity in there, ultimately it makes sense that what we're really talking about is maintaining a community in the soil of the plants, bacteria, the fungus, all the other organisms that can work together. And so when we want to grow nice vegetables, we're going to have a healthy soil and we're going to do it by not digging, by not using fertilizer, and leaving things alone, which sounds pretty awesome, actually.
It is. And the only work you have to do is mulch with organic matter. So at the garden, we mulch with the compost from the composters in just before a heat wave in the summer, early summer. And then in the fall, we put down all the leaves from the residences nearby to decompose, and come spring, they're all gone.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think composting is something we'll talk about in the future. But thank you. This soil discussion was fantastic. Thanks so much, Marianne.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to Gardens for Everybody. This podcast will focus on the structure of soil, crumbs or blocks.